Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we hear from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking to China and talking pharmaceuticals. Our panel are discussing whether the country stands on the brink of a biotech revolution. We'll speak to the author of a new research piece from UBS Wealth Management, exploring what the future might hold for what is already the world's second largest drug market. Despite that, interestingly, biologics only make up 12% of the overall, whereas globally that figure's more like 25%. That fact aside, there are a host of other reasons why this sector is primed for growth. A quarter of new cancer diagnoses worldwide are in China. There are more than 120 million Chinese diabetics. Non-communicable diseases are well above global averages too. Given that, and with growth rates for biotech in China forecasted at better than 16% through 2021, this will be the world's fastest growing market. So the time is right then to take a fresh look and mull over the findings of the UBS report. So let's get started with Carl Beresford, analyst in the UBS Wealth Management CIO and the man behind the China's Biotech Revolution piece. Carl's been an equity analyst for 25 years, more than 20 of them in Asia, covering a wide range of industrial sectors. Carl, let me ask you, why such interest here? Why is this area broadly so compelling?
There are a couple of reasons. Firstly, biologics is very much the cutting edge of medicine nowadays, and it's the most effective way to treat non-communicable diseases. And the spread of non-communicable diseases, they are non-communicable, but they are incidences that are growing very fast as part of a population effect and an aging demographic effect globally, not just in China. But what we see in China is we see, in a way, it's an accelerated kind of aging. And combined with very rapid urbanization, the incidences of non-communicable disease, these chronic diseases, are very high in China. So, you know, we have the statistic that one in four new cases of cancer globally is now in China. For some types of cancer, like lung cancer, it's actually one in three. China has the largest diabetic community in the world, 120 million, and it has a great dependence on imported drugs to deal with a lot of these issues. So you asked me why this has caught my attention. I think there's a couple of things. The first question is, China has a largely generic drug market. So there's the question of where suddenly are they going to get the innovation culture to develop these very cutting edge type of organic drugs, biologics. So that's the first thing that I was curious about. And then secondly, I mean, I think the captive demand growth within China is there. We know it's there because of these high incidences of NCDs. And because of this, the government is actually trying to open up the market further because of such a huge dependence on imported drugs. So possibility of sort of import biologic import substitution is there, the demand growth is there, but on the other hand, how long will it take Chinese drug companies to become truly innovative? And this is an area that we looked at in some depth and we came up with some quite interesting findings.
Let's look at some of the projections, Carl, that all the innovation we've already been hearing about has been driving. Pretty striking numbers, like China being the fastest growing biologics market. Tell us a bit more, Carl, about why there is a compelling growth story here.
The biosimilar biologics drug market, where there will not be patent issues and where they would not need to have the same level of innovation as if they were producing first-in-class bioriginal drugs. So we see a huge opportunity here for China. We believe the biosimilar market will be an important driver of that growth we talked about in China's biologics market.
Carl Beresford. Lachlan Towart is an equity sector strategist for UBS Wealth Management. Lachlan, maybe you can give us more of the big global view here. We're talking in particular about biologics. Where does China fit into that overall global picture?
The starting point would be the global pharma industry, and that's going to include biologics and more traditional small molecule drugs. So that's about a $1 trillion industry overall. And the biggest part of it, obviously, is still the US, as it has been for some time. But what's interesting is that China is now the second largest drug market globally. So that includes beyond just the biologics. But if you take the total value of the Chinese market, it's probably in the order of $130 billion or so. Still a long way behind the US, which is about 400, but of course it's growing faster, as you already alluded to. So, you know, it's an interesting market for companies, of course. We've seen many Western pharma companies have been investing heavily in China for some time, but it was a big source of growth for them for a while. And of course, it's very interesting for investors because the global industry has slowed down. Mid-single-digit growth is probably where we're falling out over the next few years. That's a lot lower than it used to be in the past. But of course, China, with a large population, still relatively untapped in terms of penetration of newer, more advanced drugs, more modern drugs, and certainly in terms of biologics, and with domestic government policy that really is encouraging those drugs to be used, it's seen as an area where the growth is going to be more rapid and is going to be almost guaranteed, if you will. So it's certainly a very interesting area now for both companies and investors.
So how to best position to gain exposure, whether it's early stage innovators, legacy pharma companies moving into biologics, or do we come back, Lachlan, I guess, to that old truth about pursuing diversification?
It's important in any equity portfolio to be diversified, and with biotech it's particularly important. And the reason for that is very simple. The failure rate of drugs in development is still 90%. So for every 10 drugs going into the clinical pipeline, you're going to get one drug is going to be approved. Now, the big diversified pharma companies, and there are big diversified pharma companies in China just as there are in the West, they are less directly exposed to the success or failure of one particular product. But what is exciting for many people about smaller biotech stocks, and also will be exciting for many investors in Chinese biotech, is you have this leverage to the success or potentially failure of a particular product in the pipeline. And these companies, you know, a rule of thumb, if you have a company, a biotech company, where one product is in late stage of development and the rest is very early, you would often see that company's share price fall 70% or so in the event that drug were to fail. So that's the kind of risk that you run, idiosyncratic risk in an individual stock. So yes, the best way to manage that is to manage your position sizing and to be diversified within your biotech portfolio.
Let's look longer term and consider the potential for global expansion for China. What do we know, Carl Beresford, about that potential? And what will the development of those assets overseas look like if it does happen?
We're at very early stage at the moment. So Chinese companies are out-licensing their drugs. There have been a few famous cases. It's only happened in the last 2 years, but a couple of companies have out-licensed monoclonal antibody drugs to the US, and they've received upfront payment for the licenses and will receive royalties for those. I think that there are a lot more other cases of these out-licensing in the pipeline. But what is interesting is that 25% of new drugs under development or new molecules under development in China at the moment are being concurrently developed overseas. So Chinese are doing the clinical trials for these drugs at the same time in overseas market. And I think this is quite an exciting development. The overseas market is dominated really by, in terms of trialing overseas and launching in markets other than your own, this is only happening with European and US pharmaceutical companies. So there's a possibility that they will have to contend with the new guy on the block over the next 10 to 20 years. And China's certainly moving in that direction. So we are still at very early stages. I've got to sort of underscore that. But it seems to be moving in that direction when we look at the fact that, and that there are 800 molecules, including foreign company trials in China. There are 800 molecules under development, and 200 of them are being concurrently developed overseas. I mean, that's quite a big number. And it may take 10 years before they're commercially launched, and it may only be a fraction of those. But if it's, you know, 20 or 30 molecules developed overseas, that's already, you know, launched, commercially sold overseas, that's already quite a large number. So I think that the sheer scale at which China have taken on growing this industry, it only needs a modest share of this to be developed overseas, is already quite a large number.
Back to you, Lachlan, on this point. Let's talk about Chinese potential and how it could go global. What are the keys to China doing that? What drives that success or otherwise?
It's an interesting question because I think it has lots of different answers. The first one is to say that if the Chinese industry is able to successfully develop good drugs that work, then they absolutely should go global, right? There is an argument that in the short term, they have enough market opportunity in the domestic Chinese market that it doesn't have to be a strategic priority for Chinese companies to export. But the reality is that if a drug works in China, it's going to work, most likely in America, it's going to work in the US. So if you can meet the hurdles, the regulatory requirements, and there's no reason in time that the Chinese companies can't, then they absolutely should be exporting and they should be challenging the Western companies. What does it take to get there? Well, you've already mentioned that there are a number of government policies in place. But the way I would think about it is to step back and say, well, what does it take any biotech company to succeed? And I think there are three success factors. You need capital, because in the West, it costs up to $2.5 billion to develop a drug. I have no doubt there is enough capital in China. You need good management, who have experience. There is an art as well as a science, drug development. And I think we've seen, maybe you talked about with Carl, that there are a large number now of returnees, Chinese people who have been working in the West, in big drug companies, in biotech companies, established companies, and really they're coming back to China and bringing that management expertise with them. So I don't think there's any doubt that if not now, that at least in due course, there will be enough management capability in China. The third part is the hardest one, and that's innovation. And I say it's the hardest because you can't mandate innovation, right? You can put the building blocks in place and you can wait, but it takes time and maybe a little bit of luck in order to really have successful innovation. I think that's true everywhere in biotech. It's not a comment specifically about China. Having said that, China is going to invest, and that means they'll have critical mass, and the more shots on goal you have, probably the greater chance you have. So I think it's fair that probably China will get there. But to me, the question will be, when does the innovation come through? And related to that, how is it accepted in other countries? Now, I think there are promising signs. I mean, we just had last week news that the Chinese FDA approved a drug called fruquintinib for colorectal cancer. And I believe this is the first drug fully developed in China through a program of clinical trials and all of that data submitted to the CFDA. Now, the company developing fruquintinib is planning to launch it in Europe and the US, but it's several years behind. It's only in the first phase of testing. So that will take time. And that would be my last part of the answer to the question, is time. Partly because, as I mentioned, many companies will focus initially on the domestic market, but also this is a long cycle industry. Drug development is potentially a 10-year process. So if a company is having a good idea now, we could expect to see the results of that in the market in 10 years' time. So even with all of these things in place, I would caution people against assuming that Chinese companies will suddenly make a big impact in the US market with innovative drugs. I think that will come, but it will take some time.
And Lachlan Tower, what about regulatory relief? Across this space, how much of an issue is regulation?
So I think what we're seeing in China is change in the regulatory environment. I'm not sure I would describe it as relief. It's really that the government wants to improve the quality of their healthcare and access to healthcare as well, which has largely been achieved. But they want to improve the quality of the drugs. They've asked drug companies to submit better quality data. And they've really tried to weed out the drugs that don't do anything. And that's an important part of upgrading the domestic pharma market. So it's certainly change, and it's change that favors the innovative companies. And that's why the market is interesting. But I'm not sure I would describe that as relief from regulations. Perhaps one way to think about healthcare regulation is, be careful what you wish for. You know, you want to have processes in place that guarantee the safety to the extent you can of the drugs in the market. You don't want to remove those. It's good to shorten regulatory timeframes, but there's a reason that those timeframes exist, and we don't want to necessarily take them away.
Finally, on the programme, a last takeaway, perhaps. What about innovation and what might foster or restrict that going forward? Lachlan Tower first.
We talk a lot about innovation, and innovation, especially breakthrough innovation, is very important in the industry. The other side of that coin is increasingly governments, who usually are the people that pay for healthcare, are focused on cost containment. And I think in the future it's more and more important for the industry and for pharma companies to try to be balancing innovation with cost containment. For example, you see a much greater focus on cost control now from insurance companies. And what I mean by that is that incremental innovations that don't really improve clinical outcomes, but maybe save a little bit of time for patients, they used to be able to command a premium price, and not anymore. You know, so we could talk a lot about the use of technology in healthcare and, you know, exactly where these budgetary concerns are starting to bite. I think it's fascinating. It's not the topic of your piece. But I think that innovation and cost control are both important. I think there are good opportunities for investors on both sides of that coin. And really, that's the other thing I would point you to.
And Carl Beresford, last word to you. You have a little sort of anecdotal note here, I know, about a recent hit film in China called, and this is the English title, dying to survive. Can you tell us a bit about this? Why does this maybe then also tell us something interesting about the state of the drug market in China?
There is a movie in China called, the Chinese name is I'm Not a Medicine God. It's a major hit, and it's about an ordinary guy that's dying of some form of cancer, and he manages to get hold of generic drug, a cheap generic drug from India that could cure him, and then he helps others gain access to this drug. And it triggered quite, first of all, it's a very low-budget film, but it's actually pressured the government to allow more foreign drugs into the country, at least consider them for the national reimbursement list. I think there's recently a new batch of 36 drugs were put on the pre-negotiation platform, and this was believed to be, to a degree, sentiment pressure from the success of this movie. And there's been a few questions about whether that's a good or bad thing for the sector. I think it is a good thing in the sense that the government really is addressing the needs that people have for medicine not available in China. But it does also underscore the huge opportunity that's there, captive in the market for new drugs coming from Chinese biologic companies. So I think it's just a function of demand and the fact that the government is also very keen to get the drugs to the people that need them. This movie has been quite an interesting just development in the last couple of months.
And that's Carl Beresford bringing us to the end of this 207th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.